the folks I have in the studio with me are talking more specifically about heart health, and I think the emphasis is going to be on heart health for women. People, I think, have a sort of stereotypical picture in their mind that heart disease is more prevalent, and maybe it is statistically more prevalent among men, but women are not immune, and this is something we'll be, I'm sure, covering in the coming half hour with my guests. One has some experience, personal experience, with heart health issues. She works for Central Vermont Home Health and Hospice. In fact, all three of the guests do. But Colette Page works as a billing specialist for CVHHNH. And good morning, Colette. I want to welcome you to the program and thank you so much for joining us via telephone, I guess it is.
Glad to be here. Good morning, Dave.
And Bridget Chatterley, you are a telehealth nurse manager at the CVHHNH, and I suspect that means you spend a lot of time on the phone talking to people about issues like heart health.
Correct. That's absolutely what I do.
And I want to also welcome Emily McKenna, who is marketing and communications manager with CVHHNH. And she sort of has an overview of pretty much every issue this agency, which starts from, I think, a perspective mainly of home health, deals with. Emily, you've been, one of the things you've been doing in recent months is reaching out to me some and saying, hey, let's get some health issues on the air here, and I appreciate your reminders and you coming in this morning to talk about this issue of heart health.
Thank you very much.
And so I want to start with perhaps you, Emily, just to get an overview and talk about what really is on, you know, tops on your agenda for this for today.
Well, I thought it was interesting that you mentioned the perception that heart health is more of an issue for men than it is for women. Statistically, I think that it is more of an issue for women. The statistics that I shared with you, 1 in 3 women are affected by heart disease, and heart disease is the number one killer of women, I think more than cancer. So it's a very serious issue for us, but I do think that perception exists that heart attacks are something that afflict men more than women. And so our goal, my goal in coming here, you know, February is American Heart Month, and every year we do something as an organization to acknowledge that, and this year we decided to focus on the effect of heart disease on women.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to do something to provide some information, education to our community about the risks of heart disease and what you could do to kind of prevent it from affecting you, and also to inspire people in our community to look at their own lifestyles and to maybe think about some changes they could make to their diets or to their exercise routine. And Colette is one of the 7 women who we featured, who we talked to just share their stories about their experiences with heart disease and what they're doing to live heart healthy.
And Colette Page, tell me about those experiences. How have heart health issues impacted your life?
Well, quite to our surprise, in my own family, my older sister, 2 weeks after her 49th birthday, she suddenly, literally, dropped dead at work. She was not overweight. She exercised regularly, and she did not have any health issues like high blood pressure or high cholesterol herself. And the autopsy revealed that she had hardening of the arteries in her heart. And she, I guess that can cause a misfire or something, because something went wrong and she literally collapsed at work and was died from it. Atherosclerosis, I guess it's called.
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm very sorry about the death of your sister. That must have had a terrible impact on your entire family, and that is young to pass away from heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, let me sort of get to, how does somebody in that situation prevent that kind of an outcome? And let me bring in Bridget Chatterley on this, because Bridget, if you could get nice and close to the mic there and tell us your thoughts on somebody's in their 40s. They seem to be outwardly healthy, they seem to be in good shape, and all of a sudden this comes on as a surprise. Was there some way to avoid that?
Well, I think the answer is yes and no. Unfortunately, we don't have all the information and all the means to prevent a sudden death from almost any diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, one of the particular things about cardiac disease is it's often silent, and there often are very few warning signs. But that doesn't mean that not doing the things that we do know that helped prolong a healthy cardiac life are not worth doing. So it's still very important to look at diet and lifestyle and keep a close watch, for example, on one's intake of salt and changes in weight. If the weight is difficult to keep stable, that's a sign that there are things that need to be addressed.
Now, Colette tells us that her sister died of arterial sclerosis. Is there a way to catch that on an annual physical or anything that that might have given her doctor or her some warning signs?
Well, typically, yes. If someone has angina or chest pains, and this can be assessed medically, and they can do tests. They can do it like a percutaneous entrance into the blood vessels and actually scan to see if there are blockages in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they won't do that if there aren't any indications that that's coming. So in this particular case, there may have been some other factors that we don't know about that were predisposing. Mm-hmm. That's not the most typical thing that we see.
Colette, let me ask you, your sister, she had... Tell me a little bit about her own history. Was she a regular exerciser? Was she somebody who avoided things like smoking or heavy drinking or
a
generally healthy person?
All of that. She didn't smoke. She didn't drink very much. She was always very active, very on the go, kind of a high-strung person.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real shock to all of us. So each of us went and had our own hearts tested. I went through like a stress test with a cardiologist, and ultrasound of my heart, and my brother and sister also went through testing, and we all tested out perfectly healthy. So it is an unusual case, quite unusual.
Yeah.
But it brought to mind, the things that we can do to stay healthy and keep that in mind.
Obviously, so much with medicine is essentially trying to lower the odds of something bad happening. And certainly, nobody, I guess, is completely immune from a sudden, what sounds like, to use one metaphor, sort of a lightning strike here. But then, on the other hand, that happens less often in the general population, and one presume you lower the chances of it happening to you if you are someone who eats well and exercises and avoids tobacco and lots of alcohol. And this, Emily,
I think when we're having this conversation about what happened to Colette and her sister, I think part of the reason why I wanted to share the stories of these seven staff was because each of them in their own way, Colette included, and I'd love, Colette, for you to talk about some of the things that you do on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
are kind of knowing what their risks are and taking very conscious and thoughtful steps to make modifications to their diet, mm-hmm. to get enough sleep at night, to drink plenty of water, to get a lot of exercise. And each of the seven women who we featured are kind of shining examples of the myriad ways that you can take steps, not to prevent it, because it doesn't seem like that's possible, but to at least put yourself in the best possible and healthiest position, the heart healthiest position that you can be. And so I think, like I said, I really want to share Colette's story. And if people visit our website, to read the other six women's stories, to kind of have a little bit of inspiration or motivation to say, what can I do today and what can I keep doing on an ongoing basis to put myself in the best position possible.
And Emily, give us that website if you would.
It's cvhh.org, and we've got all seven women's stories right linked from our website.
And so it sounds like there may be a range. I was looking at them the other day, and it looks like there's a range of strategies that folks are, and a range of activities and approaches that people take. Sometimes when I'm cooking a meal, I'll look at recipes online, and I'll take a little bit from this recipe, and a little bit from that recipe, and a little bit from the next recipe. It kind of melds them together, and it becomes kind of my own thing, mm-hmm. right? And so it sounds like you could do this here. You could really sort of read these stories and find out. Here's somebody who, takes a walk for a certain distance every day and has built up the distance over time and that sort of thing. Here's somebody who has really worked on trying to limit certain dietary inputs which are known to cause heart disease, and you can end up with a mixture of things that may work for you better than, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think ultimately you want to find something that does work for you. If you hate, one of the women we profiled, Robin Bedore, who's our, works in our recruiting department, she said, I don't prohibit myself from eating foods. I don't say I'm never going to eat these foods. She recently lost 40 pounds and she's got a family history of diabetes, I think it was. And she said, if I say I'm never going to eat these things, my diet is going to feel like punishment and I'm going to set myself up for failure. So I think you do have to find something. And I'm not a medical professional, but just kind of from trying to be healthy myself. And again, Colette can kind of weigh in here. What have you done to make what you're doing sustainable?
Yeah. Ice cream sundae goes from once a day to once a week to maybe once a month.
Yeah.
And then when you have that on that 30th day of the month or whatever it is,
you savor it.
You really enjoy it all that much more. So, Richard, what do you tell me about your work in talking with patients and do you have conversations with folks about the about what they can do in their own lives to enhance their heart health?
Well, yes, I do, but more specifically, I'm involved in monitoring people who have cardiovascular disease, mm-hmm. amongst other fluid overload type of conditions. And sometimes after they've come out of the hospital and they've been home for a little while, then we do get down to the looking at healthy lifestyles and things that they might be able to consider. But a lot of my work is actually helping them navigate their health issues post heart attack or post stenting, or usually in a sort of subacute phase where monitoring their weight gain or weight loss, mm-hmm. blood pressure spikes, heart rate irregularities, low oxygen, that kind of thing. So I, my program is called Telehealth, and we get people's vital signs every single day, and we also get a...
Via the telephone, right?
It's actually a software on an iPad. It could be on a telephone, a smartphone. It could do the exact same thing, but mm-hmm. it's a specialized software that collects these objective signs of health, the vital signs that traditionally nursing and healthcare professionals are looking at, and it sends them to us so we can look at those. And along with that, it also asks some specific questions, like, you know, are you having any chest pain? So when we come back to Colette's story, some degree of increased shortness of breath or increased swelling or increased chest pain would probably, I mean, in most cases, those things would have been somewhat present, mm-hmm. and they might have flared a little bit, and that would be definitely the sort of thing I'm doing, is looking at those minor changes and then calling people, talking about it, helping them determine whether this is just a little bump that's not significant, or whether this is something that's part of a trend and needs some medical attention or some tweaking of their profile.
So if I'm on the receiving end of this, if I'm a patient who's in the telehealth program, am I actually like putting a blood pressure cuff on myself as I'm hooked up via the iPad and you're reading my blood pressure from your office?
Yes, except that the beauty of this machine is that we don't all have to do it at the exact same moment.
Right, sure. So it's what do they call it? Asynchronous, I guess, where you can report it any time of day, and then you can come along and check it when you can.
Right.
And then you say, wow, this patient just saw a big spike in blood pressure.
Yeah.
I'm going to call this patient ask how they're doing. I mean, is that part of what you do, too, is a follow-up?
It absolutely is. Yeah. And in the best case scenario, I'm seeing, a relatively significant spike, but not the point where we're almost in the area where a stroke might be imminent.
Mm-hmm.
That has occurred within my work at CPHHH, that I have called and the person is actually undergoing a transient ischemic attack.
Hmm.
And maybe the family member is about to call 911 or has called 911, and then my role has been to counsel and support the family.
Yeah.
Pending the arrival of the EMS.
Wow, that must be a pretty tough and nerve-wracking few minutes when you're in the midst of that. I mean, that's got to be a pretty high-stress situation for anybody trying to worry about, can I save this person's life, essentially?
Mm-hmm.
Or save them from long-term serious disability. I would gather that some of these things... the ischemic, what, give me that phrase again.
Ischemic heart disease, or it's when there's a blockage and the oxygen isn't getting through to the cells.
Yeah. And some of these things, I gather, are not instantaneous. They can build up over the course of a couple days.
Months, years.
Yeah. But even this sort of attack, when we are talking about a fairly acute situation, if it is... if the situation is suddenly building in a much more rapid way over a course of, say, 48 hours or so, and it ends up being way better to catch it on Wednesday morning than on Thursday evening, that makes a big difference what you're doing, it would seem.
I would say so. I'd say that there's been, many catches every week. I'd say I have two or three patients that... something is brewing, to put it, in a good term, and this program enables us to get that information to their doctors fast or to their nurses that they can actually visit the patient in person, because that's another part of this.
Emily, let me back up a little bit and ask you sort of what CVHH&H recommends for, say, you're in a part of your life where obviously heart disease becomes more common in elderly people. Heart disease becomes more common in elderly people who've had smoking history or bad diet history or, heavy alcohol use, this kind of stuff. It seems like a lot of what you would want to do as CVHH&H is to do some intervention ahead of even getting to the stage where Bridget comes into the picture, right?
In our role as a home health and hospice organization, we tend to, most of the time, get involved when Bridget kind of is needed.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I've tried to do in my role, and again, I'm not a clinician, but is to at least try to raise some awareness in the community of these issues. So, that's why we're here today for American Heart Month. And, I'll call you again next month when it's American Nutrition Month, so we can talk about some other important issue. I think what I want to do is just to try to inform and educate and inspire the community. I think along with that, we have relationships with the hospital. We work very closely with Central Vermont Medical Center, and we work very closely with the physicians in the medical group practices in the area. So oftentimes we have patients who we're seeing and who they're seeing or who we have seen. And so there's a lot of communication that goes around within the medical community in Central Vermont in our service area. And so I think, oftentimes we can get not necessarily a heads up, but there's a lot of collaboration around patients, especially those who we would consider particularly fragile or high risk, so that then when they do come to us, we're kind of prepared to help them in the best way that we can.
I'd like to add to that, if
sure,
I could.
Sure, absolutely, Colette. Go ahead.
Some years ago, some of the health promotion that they did here through the agency was through the Vermont Department of Health's Heart Healthy Vermonter program, getting people out skiing. Sometimes Blue Cross still is promoting that. And sponsoring also smoking cessation courses classes. And I was a beneficiary of one of those smoking cessation classes and successfully quit smoking. It'll be 31 years on Monday.
Congratulations.
Great.
Wow.
Thank you.
That's great.
That I quit smoking for good. I was a pack-a-day cigarette smoker.
Wow.
Quit at age 28. And that was really the beginning of a lifestyle change of better diet, better exercise, and just taking care of myself.
Yeah. And Colette, I wonder, you know, I wanted to bring you back in to ask you kind of the advice you give to just family members and friends in terms of, you know, I think a lot of your family members and friends undoubtedly are aware of what happened in terms of the the untimely death of your sister. And they probably look at you as to almost thinking, you know, how do we avoid us or anyone we love going down the same path? What do you say?
Yeah, I think you have to care about yourself. It comes down to that. You know, do you care enough about yourself to really take care of yourself? And to me, that's a self-discipline thing. I don't want to be overweight. You know, and part of that's vanity, but I just don't want to be overweight. I don't want to be sick in my old age and have some of these debilitating illnesses that I've seen my parents age and go through.
Yeah.
I want to stay young-looking and healthy for as long as I can. So it's really a personal choice. So I want those things for myself, so I do those things that I can do that's in my control to do, to get enough sleep, to drink a lot of water, to go to the gym. It's an excellent tension reliever, too, and stress reliever to be active, and you just have a lot more energy, and I feel better. You know, I'm going to be approaching 59 next month. And I want to stay young looking as long as possible and be able to go out and hike and run with my doggy and things like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, good for you, because you know, one attitude that just came to mind the other day was that a lot of folks I think have a, you know, a lot of people have a little bit of a negative view of themselves, or you know, there's something wrong with me or whatever. But you deserve good fuel put into your body, you know? I mean, you care about what kind of food you put in front of your dog every day, and you want to make sure that your dog, you love your dog, and you feel like your dog ought to get the best dog food that the dog can get, right? And, you know, within a reasonable budget or whatever. But, and so I think anybody who really cares about making sure that they put nutritious food in front of their dog and then sits down and, you know, munches away on potato chips while drinking alcoholic beverages or something, is saying, what about the inputs into my own body, and what do I deserve, you know?
Right.
And so...
And, you know, that on an occasional basis, you know, Super Bowl Sunday, fine. But as a lifestyle, not so much.
Yeah. Well, it's a... It is actually a real challenge for a lot of folks, and I don't mean to minimize it, because you know, people struggle, and you can tell that just walking down the street and seeing the prevalence of obesity in our society, and people who have, you know, disabilities that build up over time because of really difficulties getting diet under control and that sort of thing.
I'll add quickly that that again, kind of why I wanted to come today was to show people that there are small steps you can take. So I think there's a lot of negative news, and yes, obesity is definitely a problem, but there are small steps that you can take, such as the steps that Colette takes, that the six other people who we have profiled are taking every day to make conscious and thoughtful choices to be healthier. So,
Emily, give me just a couple of other examples. Colette obviously is a great example of a story that was worth telling here. But just have a minute or so.
I can give you two quick ones. So Shelby Sheekwin is a nurse. She's a registered nurse. She works in Barrie for us. She told me that when she graduated from nursing school, she was 60 pounds overweight. She didn't feel good about herself, and she said, how can I tell people to live healthy lifestyles and to make changes if I'm not doing that myself? She said, how can I walk the walk? How can I talk the talk if I'm not walking the walk? So she kind of changed her whole whole lifestyle. She exercises, drinks a ton of water, changed her diet. She said she puts good things in. And she said as a result of that, she's been able to lower her bad cholesterol and increase her good cholesterol. So,
all right. Well, I guess we're going to have to limit it to one story. And that's a good one. I liked hearing that. But we are about out of time here on the Dave Graham Show on WDEV, FM, and AM. It's amazing how time flies when you're in the middle of a conversation on the radio. It's kind of crazy sometimes. But we are coming to the top of the hour, some CBS News. Emily McKenna, Bridget Chatterley, Colette Page from CDHHNH, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.